it didn't take me long to find that it wasn't safe, legal, or rare. It's actually one of the most violent execution methods available, and it's used against the most vulnerable victims in our society. So at that point, I was like, okay, you know, had to be committed, had to be more active. If it's genuinely, truly a human being who's being killed by abortion, then there's absolutely no excuse to not be active in fighting against it.
All right, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion. We are back with another Humans of the Pro-Life Movement episode where I get to feature real cool people who are active in the pro-life movement around the world and showcase just how normal they are sometimes and just how abnormal they are sometimes. Dayan, I don't know where you're going to fall into that mix, but how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing pretty good. I guess we'll see shortly where I fall.
Sounds good. I feel like this is such a cool program because it just showcases the variety of people. And there's some people that look super normal and aren't. And there's some people that just scream pro-life activist and are the most normal people that have ever been met. Because pro-life activism draws all kinds of people. Everyone needs to be involved. We're going to dive into your role with National Campus Life Network in just a moment here, but I'm curious how you got to be working in the pro-life movement. Is this something that like you got guilt-tripped into? Was this something that, you know, there's no other jobs available and here you are? Or is this something that had a slightly different kind of origin story for how you found your way in to being the Eastern Director for National Campus Life Network?
Would you like the long story or the short one?
The long story. Give me the long story. I love long stories.
All right. Well, I was raised in a very traditional Christian household. So my whole life I've been pro-life, at least nominally. Okay. Although there were a few years between grade 9 and probably about second year university, I probably would have been classified as pro-choice, actually. Okay. Just I didn't think that. I thought I was pro-life all the way. But I was under the impression that, you know, abortion for very extreme cases, mother's life is at risk, you know, these really, really heart-wrenching, tragic cases, abortion should be available for those situations. And, you know, the more I have conversations with pro-choicers or self-proclaimed pro-choicers on the streets, the more I find that that's what most of them actually mean. To my detriment, I never actually researched any further. So I was under the impression all the pro-choice slogans, it was safe, legal, rare, it was only used in dire situations. I thought that was all true. And so I was pretty satisfied with status quo. It wasn't actually until about second year university, I think, I might be getting my dates a little mixed up, but there was this whole freedom of speech fiasco on my campus. I don't know if you're familiar with the Lindsay Shepherd incidents.
Ooh, it rings a bell, but I can't remember why it rings a bell. Brief me on it.
So she was doing this whole, she was a TA, and she was doing this class, I think it was about language and politics, or how language informs politics, something to that effect. And she shared a video. She didn't even condone it. She didn't even say she agreed, but she shared a video of Jordan Peterson and his take on the multiple genders and whether or not we should use different pronouns. And all she did was share the video, right? She was actually liberal and disagreed with him. But that just blew up all over the place, became this whole thing. I think there was like a defamation lawsuit that Jordan Peterson did against the school. It just went, it was wild. And I remember that that was like the turning point for me, because I kind of taken for granted, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of inquiry, freedom of debate, all these things were just kind of granted and given to us. And that was one of my first insight into the fact that those weren't actually given. And that got me thinking, what else? What else have I kind of been deceived on? What else do I not know? I don't know. So I started looking deeper into the abortion issue. And I'm sure you know that it didn't take me long to find that it wasn't safe, legal, or rare. It's actually one of the most violent execution methods available. And it's used against the most vulnerable victims in our society. So at that point I was like, okay, you know, had to be committed, had to be more active again. Just if it's genuinely, truly a human being who's being killed by abortion, then there's absolutely no excuse to not be active in fighting against it. Ironically enough, at the time, I had zero interest in activism. I didn't want to be an activist, didn't want to be involved in activism, none of that. I was aiming originally to get involved in the political stream. Okay. I thought I considered myself to be a good political candidate. I think I volunteered for like 2 years and just different campaigns and phone calls and that sort of thing, and quickly realized that I'm not a politician. In any way, shape, or form a politician. So at that point, one of my close friends, he was the president of one of the local campus clubs and also a member of NCLN student family. He knew that they were hiring, so he connected me with the director, and yeah, here I am.
Here you are. Cool. That's really cool. And you've been in the role for a couple years now, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I think about two now.
Very cool. I have such a profound admiration for National Campus Life Network. It is how so many pro-life leaders in Canada, obviously, have found their way into full-time pro-life outreach and involvement, and even part-time and volunteer capacities. I know that CCBR would not be what it is without National Campus Life Network. When you think of people such as myself and Jonathan Van Maren and Blaise Elaine and countless others who have streamed through the resources and support of National Campus Life Network. But rather than me talking all about National Campus Life Network, why not give you the opportunity to share a little bit about your current role as Eastern Director, which I know goes most of the way across Canada, if not all the way across Canada, because Toronto just kind of swallows up everything, I feel like, sooner or later. Maybe share a little bit from the inside. Tell us a little bit about National Campus Life Network and the role that you have currently.
Well, a lot of it relates to what you already covered. So I'll go in a little bit more detail. Like you said, I am the Eastern Director right now. And that basically means handling most of the Eastern Canada operations. But as you said, Toronto and Ontario tend to consume everything eventually. So I've been in touch with a few of the university leaders and campus leaders out Western way. But yeah, like the general objective of National Campus Life Network as a whole is to locate and identify the pro-life students who are on campus. A lot of times they're isolated. Like, we live in a culture where everyone is pro-choice just by default, because that's what we're raised with. We aren't really taught, unless you have a traditional background, not really taught about any other options. So yeah, the first aspect is identifying them and connecting them to the student network so that they're not on their own anymore. And then the other two aspects are empowering and mobilizing them, just like you mentioned. A huge, huge, huge factor. They're not going to be university students forever. Eventually, they're going to graduate.
Hopefully not.
Ideally, eventually they're going to graduate. And what we want them to be able to do once they graduate, we want them to be able to become full-time pro-life influencers in their respective fields. So maybe that means, like you are, running a pro-life organization entirely. Maybe that means a full-time commitment. For a lot of students, it's a part-time thing where they're volunteering, where they're working for a pro-life organization, a pro-life politician, you know, what have you. So yeah, just helping them develop their skills, whatever it may be, everything from being an artist to a content creator to a debater, public speaker, what have you, helping them develop those skills and then find where in the real world, so to speak, those skills can actually help change our culture. And then, like you said, connecting them to organizations exactly like CCBR, helping them to find that network, whether it's CCBR, local pro-life churches, crisis pregnancy centers, giving them real world experience where through their volunteering, through their activism, through their creation and their creativity, they can actively change our culture, you know, one conversation at a time.
Very cool. That's so cool. And I know that I'm going to go off script here just for a moment, because I want to ask a follow-up question on that.
Yes.
Because, there's students that are streaming, like you said, into all different kinds of professions and walks of life and all that kind of thing. And I'm curious if, I mean, maybe not name them by name kind of thing, but I'm curious if you'd be able to share an example or two of students that you've had the privilege to work with that have either done really cool things on campus, or even if they've taken those experiences and that formation that you guys have been able to support them with and draw that into other aspects of their life and maybe even their professional career afterwards.
Yeah. So like you said, I've only been around for a couple of years, but in those 2 years, I've had the privilege of working with a few different students. I won't name names, and also just for confidentiality, I'm not allowed to go too far into detail with one of the projects, but we've been developing a whole bunch of different projects with our students, which is like activism oriented, but not in the standard form. So one of these is actually a pro-life music video that we've been working on. So it was a graduate student who reached out, and you know, she had this song, she had the whole story, the melody, the music, all of that was finalized, but she needed help producing it and she wants to turn it into a music video. So we've been working with her and, you know, helping some of our students across our student network to connect them to her. So we've one of our recent graduates is currently helping with production of the music itself, which, you know, these are things that, like, she was calling me and she's telling me all this modification she did, and she changed the treble and altered the bass, and I didn't understand any of what she had to say, but it sounded really cool. And then others who are going to be helping with the actual production of the music video itself in a short while. So everything from actors, actresses, set design, all of this really fun creative stuff that, you know, I wish I could do, but I can't. So that's one of the big ones. It's exciting for me because it's such a new premise. I was actually shocked when she came to me and she's like, yeah, I want to release this. Just because, as far as I'm aware, I've been looking for pro-life artists, but there's only a couple that I know of who have actually produced pro-life music videos in Canada. Certainly tons in the States. There's lots of artists in the States, but not as many on this side of things. So yeah, that's a big one. I'll try not to say names. But we've had some really incredible conversations that have happened on campus. As an aside, let me know if any of this I shouldn't be saying.
No, this is all good on my front, I think.
Okay.
So I'm just very curious about, yeah, kind of showcasing some of the successes. And if a student is listening to this of like, oh, this is really cool, then Celine can help me in this way or that way, or like, it's not just people that are going into politics, or maybe it is people going into politics, that kind of thing. So 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Another one of our students from the Waterloo region, he had this incredible conversation with a young woman. It actually started out very, you know, we weren't really sure which way this conversation was going to go. You know, she was asking about, you know, cases of sexual assault, right? And, you know, I wasn't even part of this conversation. I didn't find out any of this until after the fact. But, you know, he talked to her about human rights, whether or not the preborn child is a human. And then he trotted out the toddler on the case of sexual assault and whether or not it would be appropriate to kill a toddler if the toddler reminded you of the assailant, right? And, you know, kind of throughout the conversation, she revealed to him her own personal story, which had a lot of really heavy stuff going on. And, you know, he has such a heart for people. He immediately like turned around and he's like, making sure she's okay, making sure that she's got the support she needs, that she's safe, all of these things. And she was, she's out of that situation now. But he then asked her at the end, you know, he looped back and he said, do you think that following through would have punished the child for the crimes that they didn't commit? And actually by the end of the conversation, she agreed with him. She still maintained that in cases of that extremity that abortion should be allowed, but she thanked him for being there. She said he gave her a lot to think about. She actually thanked him for not being a crazy Bible thumping zealot. And she traded contact information because she wanted to be able to follow the club and keep up to date on things. So just like to see, and that's one conversation that happened recently that really stuck out to me, but that sort of conversation has happened multiple times on campus, and just sort of seeing how hearts are changing and how those seeds are being planted, and how, you know, a lot of these women who are post-abortive are carrying that guilt and shame with them. And I think that bars healing, like it prevents them from being able to move past that and heal. So when these students have those opportunities to have those conversations in a non-judgmental, in a comforting, in a caring way, in an empathetic way, they're able to basically like show, not just tell, but actually show that they're not defined by whatever happened in the past. And there is a future, there is healing, there is forgiveness, and, you know, just kind of start that process, start taking those steps.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't agree with that more. And how, while there's certainly a lot of tools that can supplement the conversation, that human interaction, that human encounter can never be replaced. And yeah. And to be able to have that face-to-face so that you can correct any misunderstandings of the pro-life worldview or pro-life people and reset the stereotype. I think that's phenomenal. And obviously that's what we're trying to do on the podcast too, to equip people with those tools to have those kind of conversations. So that's so cool that your students were able to have those in that setting, right? Because obviously everyone knows that the campuses are one of the most important arenas for these conversations, not only because our future doctors and future politicians and future whatevers are here, but at times our current mothers and fathers are there as well, right?
Yes, exactly. I think I was reading a statistic. It was like 18 to 29 year olds make up the vast majority of women who seek out an abortion. So when you're talking campus students or even recent graduates, these are the women who are most likely to seek an abortion. They're most vulnerable to the pressures. And they're also the fathers who are most vulnerable to the situation. So to be present, to be able to offer support, like offer real support to these women, and to empower them to choose life, to find the resources and the supports that they need, and to give them a view into the truth of things, hopefully before they have to make that choice. Because in a lot of cases, you know, I hear people saying women don't regret abortion. If you go to the abortion pages on Facebook, Reddit, Instagram, it's all regret. It's all these women who have made a decision and they're filled with regret. So to try to reach these women before that happens and to give them the truth and to give them options, it's absolutely crucial.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I'd love to, we'll have to do more on NCLN coming up here, but it's the moment of truth. It's the moment of truth now as to whether you're a normal person or not. I know that I'm not. I know that most people are not. And so I'm not going to ask you to pretend to be normal or anything like that. But so obviously, pro-life ministry is something that is difficult to contain to a 9-to-5 kind of job framing. It's not the kind of thing that you necessarily put down on your desk and walk away from in the same way that at times other professions or other jobs might have. But I'm curious, like, who's Diane outside of working for NCLN? What blows your hair back? What gets you up in the morning?
Work.
Work, bingo. Okay, well, I can get you up in the morning. What do you do outside of work, I should say?
I would say sleeping, but I feel like that's
normal person then. Boom.
No. I used to be like that, where if I wasn't doing pro-life ministry, I was sleeping. I used to be really bad for that. Basically, I was pro-life ministry 24/7. If I wasn't on my phone making plans, making arrangements, making designs, doing something, then I was literally in bed sleeping. I think marriage has actually made me better at this because now you know I want to be present for my husband as well once he gets home. So now, if I'm not working, I'm with him, and either we're just relaxing or we're spending time together, spending time with friends. Yeah.
Nice. Very cool. Well, no crazy anecdotes in there. So that's all good. And I'm sure if we do a follow-up episode and then there's some crazy stuff, or I'm going to do some scrolling through your socials and see if there's any wild bungee jumping that happens every Thursday afternoon or anything like that. But no, that sounds super cool. As we begin to wrap up here, Dan, I'm curious, when you look at the outset from your vantage point with National Campus Life Network, and as you see, whether it's locally, whether it's regionally, whether it's nationally, or even internationally, when you look at what is happening within the pro-life movement or within our culture, what opportunities or maybe challenges do you see? And maybe it excites you, maybe it's daunting, but what do you see coming up in the future of the pro-life movement, and what kind of opportunities might be presenting themselves that people should be aware of and familiar with?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I'll start on the challenges. That way I can end on a positive note, not on something like sad. I think you mentioned challenges. One of the biggest ones, I would say, is actually the apathy of the church itself. Mm. A lot of times church leaders, you know, they don't want to be political, or they're quietly pro-life. And they're, in some cases, even scared, which, you know, I can understand. I can understand where that fear comes from. Especially considering, you know, vandalism that has happened in the States and everything like that. But I think when church leaders aren't ready to take a bold stand, or in some cases they're even like blatantly pro-choice and fighting for abortion, I think that causes a lot of confusion, just on a broad scale. And then especially when we're talking about pro-life youth, it's very alienating when they have pastors. Sometimes it's their own pastors, sometimes it's their friends' pastors, who are either silent on the issue or penalizing pro-lifers. It can make it that much harder to come forward or to fight for life, or even to find resources to connect with. I know for me, when I was growing up, and this is a lot of my friends who are also pro-life, there just wasn't very much conversation, even in the church. Sometimes a passing comment, but not much more than that. Nothing about what we can do about it, how we can get active, whether or not Christians even should be active. It's I would say that's probably the hardest part, especially considering people who are on the outside of the church, non-Christians, who are looking in and they're seeing some Christians say this and other Christians say that. And, you know, it's just a lot of confusion that stalls everything, I think. That and just the sheer size of the abortion amalgamation or industry, machine, whatever you want to call it. It's huge in Canada, funded by taxpayer money. I think, oh boy, I'm not remembering the numbers, but it was somewhere millions to billions right now. They crunched the numbers, and it was insane just how much taxpayer money actually goes to abortion. And it's in the media, it's in the education system, it's in politics, it's in some of our churches, it's absolutely everywhere. So just to, even as a pro-lifer, to try to address the issue, it feels like you're surrounded on all sides. And you know, it's an impossible giant. Yeah. But I think that's where, to me, that's actually what makes it rewarding as a whole, that if it was an easy fight, there would be no point to it, right? So there's so much opportunity for innovation, so much opportunity for entrepreneurship, and just, you know, there's so much that still needs to be done in Canada, especially, that pretty well any pro-life student, whatever it is they can do, it can be used to start pioneering initiatives in the pro-life movement. I like I said, like artists now who are getting involved, singers, songwriters. I've heard of florists who donate entire bouquets to mothers who are expecting with crisis pregnancy centers. I'm sure you've read about the pro-life Spider-Man. Which I was hilarious, because in university, I remember wondering about that. I'm like, you know, wonder if someone could ever use something that strange, because one of my friends was into parkour. And turns out, yes, you can. You can use climbing for pro-life ministry.
Yeah.
So yeah, just that there's so much opportunity, and no shortage of new innovative creative ways for people to get involved and to start building a culture of life. And I also think just the strength. There's a lot of local pro-life communities, student groups, different crisis pregnancy centers that all individually have so much power in them and so much potential and so much to offer. And I'm really excited to see what happens when across Canada there's like, I don't know what to call it, more, what's the word? Coordination. Coordination is the word I'm looking for across all the different groups, all the different organizations, to everything from political levels to outreach levels to educational levels, high schools, universities. I'm really excited to see what comes of that. I'm seeing it start to snowball and increase more. And yeah, can't wait to see where that leads.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point to start this wrapping up on of that unity. But also I love what you said about kind of the diversity within the unity of like I feel like every group kind of has to like we all just need to be doing this, we all just need to be doing that. But I love that approach of even within the MCLN of looking at one of the ways that we start transforming our culture is not only having a laser focus, like certainly we need to have that form of engagement and that human encounter and all that kind of stuff. But like I think there's tremendous value. And when we look at not necessarily our opposition, but when we look at a lot of other social reform for good or for ill kind of things, there is a wide array of engagement methods. I mean, you look at the abolition of the slave trade and William Wilberforce and Thomas Clarkson, you've got people that are, yeah, pottery experts and people working with jewelry and whatnot. You've got people who are newsprint, which might be more conventional, but then you've also got actors and actresses, and you've got all sorts of different things kind of touching people's lives in a ton of different ways, so that it's not just the crazy person like me on a street corner that is only talking about abortion that's talking about abortion, but rather the music you might see on your YouTube channel and what your teachers and what your people within your industry are saying and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think that's so cool to look at the different ways that people can engage and not just through pure activism, but also within their more immediate and more normal, I guess, spheres of influence.
Exactly. And one of the big things for us was the fact that, we want as many activists on the road as humanly possible, but we had students who were graduating and becoming politicians or graduating and becoming teachers or this, that, and the other thing, and they just didn't have the time. So then it became a matter of, okay, in your sphere, wherever you wound up, how do you become an activist? What does activism look like for you right now? So yeah, just wanting to be able to really hone in on their individual skills and try to help them make a life out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in closing here, in spite of my best efforts or weakest efforts, whatever we want to call it, YouTube tells me and Spotify and Apple Podcasts tell me that there's a lot of young people that listen to this podcast for whatever reason, whether they are taken by the gray hair and the wrinkles or whether they just are forced to listen by their parents or whatnot. I don't know. But for the university students, for the post-secondary students that are listening, how do people, and I guess for everyone in general, how do people get involved with NCLN and where do they learn more?
Visit our website, ncln.ca. It has a whole lot of information on the different projects that you run, different programs, where to contact us. Our email, I'll send you the emails themselves, that you can also link them in the video if you'd like. But yeah, send us an email and we'll help you start up a club, help you if you have a project that you want to run, we'll help you with that. And if you want to connect with different organizations, if you're looking for crisis pregnancy centers, yeah, just send us an email. We're more than happy to help.
Beautiful. That sounds great. All of that will be in the show notes below. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time to join me on the Pro-Life Guys podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.